ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सवीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावतीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः. Ishan chapter 3 verses 5 to 10. Nahi kaschit shanamapi, nahi kaschit shanamapi, jatutishtatya karmakrat, jatutishtatya karmakrat, kāryate yavashat karma, kāryate yavashat karma, sarva prakriti jai gunaihi,
sarva prakriti jai
gunaihi, nahi kaschit shanamapi, jatutishtatya karmakrat, kāryate yavashat karma, sarva prakriti jai gunaihi, karmendri yani samyamya, karmendri yani samyamya, यास्ते मनसास्मरन् यास्ते मनसास्मरन् इन्द्रियातां विमूढात्मा इन्द्रियातां विमूढात्मा नित्याचारस्य उच्यते नित्याचारस्य उच्यते कर्मेन्द्रियाणि संयम्य यास्ते मनसास्मरन् इन्द्रियातां विमूढात्मा नित्याचारस्य उच्यते यस्विन्द्रियाणि मनसा यस्विन्द्रियाणि मनसा नियम्यारभतेऽर्जुन नियम्यारभतेऽर्जुन कर्मेन्द्रियै कर्मयोगम् कर्मेन्द्रियै कर्मयोगम् असक्तस्य विशिष्यते असक्तस्य विशिष्यते यस्विन्द्रियाणि मनसा नियम्यारभतेऽर्जुन कर्मेन्द्रियै कर्मयोगम् असक्तस्य विशिष्यते नियतं कुरु कर्मत्वं नियतं कुरु कर्मत्वं कर्मजायोक्य कर्मणः कर्मजायोक्य कर्मणः शरीरयात्रापि च ते शरीरयात्रापि च ते न प्रसिद्ध्येत कर्मणः न प्रसिद्ध्येत कर्मणः नियतं कुरु कर्मत्वं कर्मजायोक्य कर्मणः शरीरयात्रापि च ते न प्रसिद्ध्येत कर्मणः यज्ञार्थात् कर्मणं यत्र यज्ञार्थात् कर्मणं यत्र लोकोऽयं कर्मबन्धनः लोकोऽयं कर्मबन्धनः तदर्थं कर्मकं पेय तदर्थं कर्मकं पेय मुक्तसङ्गः समाचर मुक्तसङ्गः समाचर यज्ञार्थात् कर्मणं यत्र लोकोऽयं कर्मबन्धनः तदर्थं कर्मकं पेय मुक्तसङ्गः समाचर सह यज्ञा प्रजा सृष्ट्वा सह यज्ञा प्रजा सृष्ट्वा पुरोवाच प्रजापतिः पुरोवाच प्रजापतिः अनेन प्रसविष्यध्वम् अनेन प्रसविष्यध्वम् एष वोत्कृष्टकामधो एष वोत्कृष्टकामधो सह यज्ञा प्रजा सृष्ट्वा पुरोवाच प्रजापतिः अनेन प्रसविष्यध्वम् एष वोत्कृष्टकामधो. Arjuna, in the beginning of this chapter, questioned Lord Krishna, why are you compelling me to do this action when you are praising knowledge so much? And I am also interested in leaving this battlefield so that I can go to the forest and focus on something higher. If that being the case, then why are you forcing me to do this Gora Karma of killing people, especially my relatives and friends? Now, then Lord Krishna answered, there are two paths, in fact there is only one path, the two-fold path. It has been mentioned by me, there is for active action and for contemplative jnana yoga, path of knowledge. If you belong to contemplative category, then I won't be forcing you to get into any action. Right? But since you belong to active category, you have to do action, through action you have to walk. This is understood. This is the message that Krishna is saying. And then he continues in 4, he says, not by abstaining from action. Or he is giving reason. How come by neglecting action you cannot get to the perfection? So he says, not by abstaining from action does man gain actionlessness, nor by mere renunciation does he attain perfection. Actionlessness is rising above action. Now, what is actionlessness? Actionlessness is a state of mind where you understand that you are not the doer but the being. You are not the doer but the being. So the problem is, we out of ego imagine ourselves to be the doer. Just a little bit of knowledge will solve this issue. You are not the one who is behind the earth revolving around the sun. Who is digesting the food when you are sleeping? So many things like that. If you just pause for a while and question, it will come to you that this ego is, this doership attitude is a falsitude. So here Lord Krishna says, simply merely running away from action, you don't become you don't reach a state of actionlessness. In other words, one person who is running after action and the other person who is running away from action, this is happening at the external level, but inside what is happening, both are filled with action. Like if you are, you know, like you do not want to meet somebody, you are also an important person and the other person also happens to be an important. Let us say, for example, two politicians. One is the head of the ruling party, the other one is the head of the opposition. This is just a story. And both of them are not in talking terms and they hate each other. They don't want to be seen in the same place at the same time, because they don't want to see each other's face. Right? So if there is a wedding, one would go for the wedding and the other one would go for the reception. Firstly, they will find out between the PS discussions are going on. Find out where is he going. Is he going for the wedding? Is he going for the reception? In other words, he is preoccupied with the other all the time. So the person who is running away from action, he is not free from action. He in fact gets more and more entangled in. That's what he is saying. Not by abstaining from action does man gain actionlessness. By abstaining from action, he only get entangled more and more in action. See, remember this. Dharma Shastra, a person like Krishna, who is a Dharmatma, they are least concerned about what is happening at the outside. What is happening inside is what they are concerned about. They are least concerned about what is expressed, what is happening outside. When we are not Dharmatmas, we are more concerned about what is happening outside. So he is saying it is not, it really doesn't matter whether you do actions that are considered as good, actions that are considered as bad. These are not the issue. The issue here is the doer is the issue, not the doing. By dropping the doing, you don't rise above doership. Therefore, this has got nothing to do with doing. That's all he's saying. If you have to interpret it this way, you have to put it like this. Not by abstaining from doing does man gain above doership. Now, if you want to translate it another way, you have to put it like this. Not by abstaining from doing does man gain rise beyond doership. Then, not by mere renunciation does he attain perfection. Mere renunciation means simply giving up things. See, a child by simply giving up toys, does it become an adult? But when it becomes an adult, the toy world might be given away, would be given away rather.
Guruji, what is the difference? Like, suppose a person doesn't know the taste of chocolate, and one person knows the taste of chocolate. So something like someone who still has never tasted chocolate saying, I've given up chocolate.
That has no meaning.
So one who likes it, giving it up would be a difference.
Yeah, and one who likes it, giving up chocolate externally, also doesn't mean that he's risen about chocolate because mentally he'll be lingering on it. So it's nothing to do with giving it away externally. It is to do with rising beyond chocolate. So when that person rises beyond the chocolate level, the chocolates would be given away automatically. In fact, chocolates around that person, not around the person, is not noticed by the person, doesn't make any difference to that person. See, in other words, when you are healthy, there is no part of your body at all. If there is part of the body, that means you are unhealthy. Similarly, to say that I am a renunciate, if you are a renunciate, means whatsoever you are claiming to be a renunciate with reference to that particular object, you must be free at the top level. But physically you have given up. But mentally you are saying 25 years since I gave up cigarette, 40 years since I divorced. That means you are still mentally lingering on that object of person. So it is not by mere renunciation does he attain perfection. Simply knocking off one by one, one by one. Another important thing that we need to notice here is to say that I am giving something away.
That means it belongs to you.
That means you are claiming that it does belong to me once upon a time, which I had given it away. So if you strictly question, is there anything that belongs to you? So from what Krishna is trying to say here is, actually there is nothing that belongs to you. So the problem is this mindness. So you cannot give up things unless the mindness is there. And as long as the mindness is there, you are not perfect. So giving away things, retaining the mindness, you cannot reach perfection. That's what he's saying. On the contrary, give away the mindness and you may have things around you, you are still closer to perfection or you are already in perfection. This is what we need to understand. That's why I said Dharma Shastra has got nothing to do with outside. When the inside changes, the outside changes. Exactly.
Exactly.
So therefore it is not by mere renunciation does he attain perfection. But all the world is concerned about outside. There is hardly anybody putting in effort to understand the inside. Like the education that you see today is all about outside. There is hardly any education about inside. And when we say education about inside, we don't mean the moral education. Even moral education is to do about the outside only. It's nothing to do about the inside. Inside, once it changes, thereafter you cannot be a thief. You cannot be negative once the consciousness has been brought out. So therefore he says these things will not take you there. By giving up action you cannot get moksha. By avoiding your duties, responsibilities and what you have to do, you cannot gain moksha. If it was simple, then everybody just have to take up the ropes. You want moksha, take up the ropes. It's not that simple. It's not changing the outside. It is evolving from within. Next verse. Nahi kaschit shanam apihi, nahi kaschit shanam apihi, jatutishtatya karmakrit, jatutishtatya karmakrit, karyate havashat karma, karyate havashat karma, sarva prakriti jai gunaihi, sarva prakriti jai gunaihi, nahi kaschit shanam apihi, jatutishtatya karmakrit, कार्यते यवशक कर्मा सर्व प्रकृति जय गुणै ही. None can remain even for a moment inactive. None can ever remain inactive even for a moment. All are made to act helplessly indeed by the qualities born of Prakriti. Each individual is made up of a physical body mind and intellect enlivened by Atma, as we know. The mind of any individual is made up of three temperaments. The three mental temperaments are Sattva, Rajas and Tamas. So the three gunas that he talks about here are Sattva, Rajas and Tamas. All of us are a combination of all these three gunas. Sattva is the highest. When your mind is calm, composed, serene, it's called as Sattva. When it is restless, passionate, desiring, agitated, it is Rajas. Indolent, lazy, lethargic, heedless, it is Tamas. If Sattva is predominant, the other two are not that predominant, but they are there but not predominant, then you are called as Sattvika. If Rajas is predominant, Sattva and Tamas are not that much prevalent, predominant, then you are called as Rajasic. Similarly, Tamasic, when your Tamas is predominant. But all three are there. So he says, nobody can remain inactive for a moment. See, last week also we discussed this. Action and life are in fact one and the same. Inaction is death. When action ceases, life ceases. So if there is life, how can there be life when action has ceased? There can be life when the doer has ceased, not when the doing has ceased. So what he is saying is, none can ever remain inactive even for a moment. If for a moment you become inactive, you will die. Now there is a saying in English, it says, if you rest, you will rust. Even for a moment, if you rest, sometime if you keep your body at rest, means don't do any activity, any part of the body for that matter. What happens to that part? It becomes numb and then slowly it can even become dead. So therefore, all are made to act helplessly by the nature, gunas, prakriti, born of gunas, he says. Everybody has individual nature, desire. Each one has some desires. Maybe sattvic, maybe rajasic, maybe tamasic. But these are there. When they are there inside and outside you don't express them, what happens?
Frustrated.
You get frustrated and the desire starts building more. They will push you into action. Right? The more you force yourself not to do anything, it's detrimental for you. So he says, none can remain without action even for a moment, because inside there are desires. The nature will take its course. You are sleeping, but the breathing continues. The digestive system is at work. You can at will say to your legs, go there, don't go there. But can you tell your digestive systems, I'm going to sleep, don't work? It's going to work. So there is activity continuing. So what he's trying to say here is, activities continue as per the gunas. All that is there in your hands is, you can understand that you are a part of the total. And don't imagine that everything is happening because of you. Things are happening through you. This is the difference that Krishna is trying to bring in here. So he is saying, karma yoga is continuing with the actions, but with this understanding that things are happening through me. Stopping the action or doing the action with the understanding that actions are happening because of me becomes karma. Excuse me. when your inside is clear that things are happening through me, with that attitude, when you do an action, even when it is apparently an action that is considered to be negative, still, as far as you are concerned, there is no sin. This is what Lord Krishna is saying here, basically. His whole philosophy has been like this. So the papa comes because of the doer. When the doer is not there, there is no papa. That's why we say, in a child there is no doer. And therefore there is no papa for the child. In the innocent state, when the child does something, child has no doership. Therefore child has no sin. So, even when you do an action that is apparently a good action, but if the doership was there, from the spiritual point of view, it is a sin. Meaning, it will keep you away from the divinity. You will gather more and more vasanas. So he says, understand the guna's function. You are just an instrument in the hands of totality. In fact, he says this exactly like this in the 11th chapter. You are only an instrument. He tells Arjuna, you are saying, how can I kill them? How can I kill them? You are only killing somebody who has already been killed. Just be an instrument in the hands of totality and do it. Nimitta matra, Jesus. So, in that knowledge, in that attitude, the difference is there as far as the karma yoga is concerned. In action, there may not be any difference. Because if you see, Arjuna wanted to leave the battlefield. Because he was considering killing as Gora karma. Terrible action. Krishna is saying, fight. Because as far as Krishna is concerned, it really doesn't matter. A lot of people ask, sir, should I be a non-vegetarian or vegetarian? I'm trying my best to be a vegetarian, but I'm not able to. Isn't it pap and all that stuff? For them, I say, somewhere I read that Hitler was a vegetarian, I believe. I don't know, I read somewhere. Now, what does it do with me?
Actually, it is something that I'm battling because one of my nephews, he's non-vegetarian all the time, and I have my children who don't eat egg. So they ask me, Mama, how is it that Bhaiya can eat non-veg and you are not telling him not to? And you know, we don't touch egg. So it's very difficult to explain to the child. You know, I mean, right now the child is young and you say, Beta, we don't kill the egg and eat it. So then the kid says, we break the plant and eat it up. So, I mean, trying to find those answers, it's like you say, you know, the plant will reproduce. But they say, you're still killing it, that part will not grow again. It's a very difficult.
See, it is difficult to express it to a child. Depends on the child's intellectual growth. But the fact that child is asking these questions, it's not that innocent either. So therefore, you know, we need to go with the child and maybe explain to the child in the way the child can understand. But firstly, we need to understand what it is. Very often what happens is, we are not clear. We think that killing and eating is pop. Then don't sit down. Because by sitting down also you are killing so many insects. Don't walk, don't talk. You can't do anything. So many things.
Yeah, but
you see, in other words, you can't live without killing. Life will survive on lives. But what we need to do, we need to understand this, as your consciousness inside becomes more, you become conscious externally also. So the least possible damage is what you will try to create for your sustenance. Least possible. You understand?
In that movie of that, you've seen,
sure.
You must be. For that, in that also, basically, they're talking about this group of aliens calling planet. And they also, like, their whole concept is in tune with nature and with the same consciousness level and everything. And even they kill animals to eat, but like, this woman comes and she just, like, you know, this animal is there in the dark and she kills the animal. And this lady, she says that, how could you do that? Because, you know, she goes with other friends and sorry to the nature and sorry to the mother, whatever, the spirit mother. That, even you came to eat your food. So she says, no, when you're killing to eat is a different thing. And they bless, and you know, when they kill the animal to eat also, they take blessings and say thank you to nature for providing food so that we can sustain, so from life to life and everything. But when you're killing just as a form of killing, then there's no excuse, there's no reason, and you're harming something which could not be done. So in their whole concept is also that, of course, you do need to kill to survive, but the intention with which you're doing it and the whole intention.
See, there's a beautiful story which probably would throw some light on this. A guru had three sishyas, right? He gave each one of them two pigeons. Each one of them, he gave two pigeons, live pigeons, and said, take these two pigeons with you, go to some place where there is nobody, and then you can kill them. Right? Then come back. So one fellow went to a far off place where there is hardly anybody, or in fact there was nobody. He killed, came back with the two dead pigeons. Another fellow went, wherever he went there was light, so he wasn't sure whether somebody was there or not. So he went into a cave, dark place in nature, there was nobody else and it was pitch dark, and he killed the pigeons and came back. One fellow came after a few months, but with two live pigeons. He did not kill them only. So the guru asked, what happened? He said, see, wherever I went, I also went to a far off place, I also went to a cave, but wherever I went, your condition was nobody should be there, but I was always there, so I could never kill, so I came back. This is what happens. See, we put the cart before the horse. See, please understand this. From a different angle, when people say non-vegetarian food and all that stuff, they have a different reasoning for it. They say certain type of food has a certain effect in your body and certain growth ke liye, it may not be that conducive. In that sense, it's a different matter. But when scriptures talk about non-violence, they're talking about non-violence as an effect of your growth, as an effect of your inside growth. When your consciousness evolves, then you naturally will be forgiving. You naturally will be non-violent. You cannot be violent. So this non-violence concept also needs to be understood this way. Non-violence is not that you are incapacitated to physically do anything. Inside you are incapacitated. You are you will not have any hatred for any being at the inside level. Agree with me? So there are so many things at the scientific level. They say when an animal is being killed, the animal secretes certain, you know, chemicals because it knows that it's going to be killed, and they get stored in the animal meat, and that becomes detrimental for your personality as well, because you're eating all those chemicals, etc., etc. All these are okay, all these are fine, but this is not the angle in which the scriptures are talking about non-violence, right? So as far as your children are concerned, you can explain to them that all these are living beings, no doubt, right? But there are differences in terms of consciousness. That's the difference, right? Compared, plants also have consciousness, not that it doesn't have, but compared to plants, animals are more conscious. Compared to animals, human beings more conscious.
But this whole concept of veg, non-veg has, I think, come up in the last, I mean, maybe hundreds of years. But earlier, even a Maharaja, because they lived on hunting, I mean, there was no concept of growing veg fruits and vegetables and cooking them, and it was hunting. I mean, even Buddha actually used, I mean, the story which goes around, I don't know how true it is, that he died because he ate bad pork. He realized that it was bad pork. And they were basically taking whatever was given.
See, that's what I'm saying. I don't know about any of these stories, but I'm not concerned about these stories also. But in fact, it really doesn't matter whether Krishna ate meat, whether Buddha ate meat. All these things are only a problem when you don't understand spirituality correctly. When you understand spirituality correctly, like I was telling you till now, external things really doesn't matter. Exactly. The point is, like for example, Krishna is telling Arjuna to kill, fight. And yet, Krishna is talking about non-violence. Here, Hitler is a vegetarian. But out and out, a violent guy. So, this is what we don't understand. What we are failing to understand is, we are not putting in any effort in terms of growing our consciousness. We are more concerned about the outside. Scriptures are least concerned about the outside. Trust me, they are least concerned about the outside. See, the day you have surrender, the day you have acceptance, you have accepted anything as the will of God. I am only an instrument. Just think about this. It requires little thinking. The day you say, I surrender to the will of God, like Jesus says, thy will be done, not my will be done, you cannot be a thief. Why? If you misunderstand, and there are people who will quote it wrongly, they'll say, God wanted me to be a thief, therefore I am a thief. They will justify it that way. But you will know whether he is really surrendered or not when he is caught, when punishment is being meted out to him. Does he have the same attitude? God wants me to go through this punishment? If somebody who has that attitude that God has wanted me to go through this punishment, he will in the very first place will not be stealing at all. It requires little thinking. So what Lord Krishna is trying to talk about is from that angle. The biggest problem is when truth is spoken, it will always be misinterpreted. There will be very rarely a person who can understand it correctly. It is one thing to realize the truth. It is different ballgame altogether to communicate it. Because in communication, most of the time it is misunderstood. It is seldom understood. So our mind is all confusion. So he tries to interpret the words of the master according to the convenience of the student. This is the problem. That is why all the scriptures mostly are criticized, condemned, misunderstood. The more there is talking on these things, you see more nonsense happening. Because people start using them for their justification. Merely memory has been taken as jnana in many cases. The more you read Gita, the more you read Vedas, the more you by heart them, the more you memorize them, you start misunderstanding that you know them now. Memory is different from knowing. You don't know it just because you have memorized it. So, here, coming back to his words, verse 5 of chapter 3, none can ever remain inactive even for a moment. Activity will go on. According to the vasanas, things will function. They are all made to act helplessly. Karyate avashyak karma. Avashyak karma means helplessly they are. The vasanas function. You can only be a witness to them, not become a party to them. So by being a witness to them, you act, rather than being a party to them. In fact, gunas don't bring sin on you. You bring sin on you. That's what they say. by bringing in the doership. In the doership. If you bring in witnessing attitude there, there is no sin. If you bring in the doership attitude there, then there is sin. First, he said in 4, giving up of action, giving up of possessions is not going to take you. Now he is saying giving up is not possible. Giving up is not possible. Why? Because inside you have desires, vasanas, gunas are there. So giving up is not possible. Next one, he says giving up can be counterproductive. It is going to be very dangerous thing to do. Verse number 6. Karmendriyani samyamya, karmendriyani samyamya, yaaste manasasmaran, indriyartam vimudatma, indriyartam vimudatma, nityacharasya uchyate, nityacharasya uchyate, karmendriyani samyamya, yaaste manasasmaran, indriyartam vimudatma, nityacharasya uchyate. This is a very important verse. If possible, try to memorize this. Memorize in the sense, like I said, just memorizing has got nothing to do with your knowledge. But by memorizing and understanding the meaning of this verse, it helps you to every now and then reflect on it even when the text is not there with you. Karmendriya, first of all we need to understand that the physical body is housed with two sets of organs. One is called as organs of perception, the other one is called as organs of action. Organs of perception are called as jnana indriyas in Sanskrit. Organs of actions are called as karma indriyas in Sanskrit. Organs of perception are called as jnana indriyas. Organs of actions are called as karma indriyas. Karma means action. Why are organs of perception called as organs of action, knowledge, jnana indriyas? Because through perception you gain knowledge. You don't know what is an apple. You are brought, you are taken to a place where there are lots of apples. You see the apple, you know what an apple is. Seeing has brought you the knowledge of apple. So it's called as jnana indriyas. What are the jnana indriyas? Eyes, ears, nose, tongue and skin. Five organs of perception we have. Eyes, ears, nose, tongue and skin. Then karmendriyas are there. What are the karmendriyas? Karmendriyas are the ones we use to perform action. Hands, feet, organ of speech, organ of evacuation and organ of procreation. So these are the five organs we have. Five organs of perception, five organs of action. There is something else called as mind, manas, and buddhi. Manas means feelings. Buddhi means discrimination. So, organs of perception, organs of action, feelings, discrimination.
Manas or buddhi?
Manas is feelings. Buddhi is discrimination. So, this is what everybody is, right? All these are enlivened by Atma, the Self. Enlivened by Atma or the Self. Enlivened. E-N-L-I-E-N-E-D. Enlivened by Atma. Without Atma, they don't have the capacity to function themselves. What lends them sentiency is Atma. Like you have an electric bulb. The physical glass portion, and then inside it there is tungsten filament. And the electricity is passing. The electricity is not passing and there can be no light. Are you with me? Similarly, Atma, the self in you, is the enlivening factor, that which gives sentiency to his equipments. What are we doing day in and day out? There are three transactions of life that is happening. They are called as the receipt of stimuli from the external world. The world is constantly supplying stimuli. What are the stimuli? Color and form for the eyes, smell for the nose, taste for the tongue, sound for the ears, and touch for the skin. Right? Constant stimuli is there. These are received from the world. Receipt. Then there is this mind and intellect where the reaction is happening. Reaction is happening inside your mind according to your desires. If you are told from the newspaper or the news channels or advertisements you see, A.R. Rahman is coming, and the desire is there inside, reaction is there. Somebody who is not at all interested in the, music, or uninterested in classical music, but not this music, filmy music, they do not even know A.R. Rahman. These things just goes through them, no reaction. And the receipt is going through, reaction is happening, then you send forth response of calling the organizers. Can I book these many tickets? Is it possible to get in the first few rows, etc.? The response you send back to the world through the organs of action. So the organs of perception receives the stimuli. Then the reaction is happening inside you. When you send forth response back to the world using the organs of action. See what you are doing from morning till night. Now he says in this verse, Yaha. Yaha means whoever. Whoever means what? Whether you are a CEO of an organization or you are a peon. Whether you are a man or a woman. Whether you are a Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra. These things doesn't matter. In front of the law, everybody is the same. Yaha, whoever, he who. Karmendriyani. Karmendriyani means organs of actions. Plural. All organs of action. Sam yamya. Controlling. Restraining. Ya aste. One who, he who, controlling the organs of action. Sits means sitting down doing nothing. Manasa smaran. Smaran, you know. What is smaran? What is smaran? Remembering, thinking, chintana. Manasa smaran. Thinking in the mind. Of what? Indriyartham. Indriyartham means sense objects. So, in other words, whoever restraining the organs of action. Sitting down without acting, but mentally thinking about the worldly objects and things. Vinudatma. He is a colossal idiot. I am not saying what Krishna is saying. Muda means fool. Vinuda means colossal fool. That's what it means. Established in idiocy. Well rooted there. Vinudatma and Mithyachara. Mithyachara means what? Hypocrite.
Can you just repeat this whole thing?
I am coming. Sa Uchyate, he is said to be, because he is a very refined person. I am not saying it, he is said to be, he is called. See, very simple. I am trying to explain it this way so that you will never forget this verse. Karmendriyani. I explained to you what is Karmendriyani. Organs of action. Samyamya means controlling, restraining. Yaha means whoever. He who. He who restraining the organs of action. Aste. Aste means sitting down. Sits. And sits down. But manasa smaran indriyata. Mentally thinking about the worldly objects. Nityachara. Vimudatma. Savuchyate. He is said to be a fool and Nityachara. Why is he said to be a fool? And why is he called as Vimuda? Means best of the fools. Why is he considered to be the best of the fools? Because he is fooling himself. That is the worst thing to do. And Nityachara.
Better to get it rather than
keep
not doing it and
thinking about it. Means inside also you are negative and outside also you are negative. Right? Inside also negative, outside also negative. You are not a Nityachara. Inside also positive, outside also positive. You are not a Nityachara. Inside negative, outside you are pretending to be positive or Nityachara. So what he is saying is, by forcefully restraining the inside, it will only make you to become a Nityachara. Pursuit of Vedanta is only when you have transcended your worldly pursuits. Transcending the opportunity to transcend is Grihastha Ashrama. Is only when you have transcended your worldly activities. In other words, as a sannyasi, for example, if you simply take up sannyas, but the desires are all there, right? You have not transcended them. What are you doing? You are not giving any opportunity for your senses to express themselves. You have forcefully eliminated it. Say, for example, see, what we need to understand is, mind has a desire to see an object, and the mind is dictating terms to the eyes, and the eyes are seeing it. Eyes are only following the commands of the mind. Yes or no? Simply plucking the eyes. What have you done with the mind? This is a fool. A fool only. In other words, what he is saying is, a fool will only give priority and importance to the outside. But this is a difficult thing to say today, because today everything is outside. The importance is given so much for the packaging. The product inside is forgotten almost. Isn't it? So, this is the problem today. The mind is so much outside. Therefore, all these things fall on deaf ears. But what he is saying is very, very meaningful. He says he is a remote atma. Why? Because he is considering outside as something important. There is nothing there. By cutting off, just now I spoke about receipt, reaction and response. Your response is according to your reaction, no? Are you with me? Inside ko tick nahi kiya. Simply the object that can express it has been cut off. Eyes have been plucked and thrown. What is that?
Inside feelings.
Inside, you have now what you have done is, it becomes worse. Why? Because you have forcefully shut the dam. When you have forcefully shut the dam, you have made the water increase inside. The desires increase, everything increases. You understand? This creates problem, contrary result. So inside there should be no violence, and outside if there is violence or not, it really doesn't matter, is what Krishna is saying. Because outside violence is not violence. Inside violence is real violence. Like Shakespeare says, sometimes you have to be cruel only to be kind. He's talking about outside violence, sometimes you have to be. But for that you need to be inside non-violent. So there are so many practices done by people in the name of spirituality, forcefully stopping food intake, and mind is full of food. Why the, is it something like God is crazy to see you suffering outside? Isn't that, you know, these are things that needs to be understood. Inside is full of negativity, outside is pretense. Like fish is constant, is moving in pure water maybe, but it is surviving and eating dirt. His whole focus is looking for dirt for it to eat. A vulture is flying high in the sky, but all its focus is on the dead carcass on the ground. So outside you are in the mandir, but inside is full of kachada. So therefore he says, simply forcefully cutting off your karmendriyas, shutting your karmendriyas, stopping actions forcefully is not going to help you to reach moksha. Forget about helping you to reach moksha. It is not, it's also going to bring in counteractive things, in a sense, counterproductive results. If it doesn't cure cancer, it's okay. But if it increases cancer, if it also brings in other disease, you understand? So, without understanding, people are taking this big risk of giving up action forcefully. By forcefully plucking the flower, it doesn't become a fruit. But when it becomes the fruit, the petals will fall away. If Arjuna had matured to the level of sannyas, he won't even be sitting and arguing with Krishna there, why are you forcing me and all that stuff. Full and full inside Arjuna is a kshatriya, that Krishna knows. So this is going to be dangerous. When you understand your nature and you allow it to express itself fully, then you become free within. Then your pursuit for the spirituality can begin. But without understanding your nature or having some conditioning against it, and then you don't express it fully, you go against it, you in fact create much bigger problem for yourself. See, supposing you expressed your nature through Karma Yoga, I'm just giving an example. It would have taken, let us say, 25 years for you to get into spirituality fully. When I say spirituality fully, I mean to get into Vanaprastha Ashrama and Sannyasa Ashrama. We have discussed about it in detail before, so I'm not going into it much. But supposing you forcefully say, no, now itself, I'm not even getting into Grihastha Ashrama. From Brahmacharya, I'm taking direct sannyas, and you have not evolved. You think your progress will happen immediately? No. In fact, you will probably postpone it for 25 janmas. This is what you don't understand. So he says you are a Buddha. You are a fool. What is the use of administering the balm on the body to remove the scar when the disease has come from inside bacteria? You need to administer the medicine inside, right? To remove the bacteria. Then you can do something to do with the scar, do away with the scar. But the whole focus, the whole thing, if you see, how do we try to control somebody? If you are a bad person, nobody will respect you. So, you want to be respected by others, therefore you will not be bad. Instead of inculcating the value of being good, there's a difference. Are you with me? Do you want to be good, or do you have to be good? You need to understand this. Many times we think we have to be good. Because if I have to follow the rule, if I don't follow the rule, then police will catch me. The cameras are there. It's very interesting. Even here, you know, here in India, we don't have fixed cameras in many places. Mostly these policemen bring the cameras and keep it in some vehicle, and they also hide in distance somewhere. And suddenly you can see everybody is reducing their speed and all that. Because they've seen the policeman. All these cases have to be good cases. Because if I am not following the rules, I'll have to pay the fine. I'll probably lose my license. Or I probably could be imprisoned. I have to be good cases. If I want to be good, then it really doesn't matter whether the camera is there, police is there or not, I would still continue to be good. If you see the whole society in the bringing up of things and everything, what will others think? Like Shakespeare says, be rich, not gaudy. Be rich. Dress up according to, you know, be presentable. Dress up nicely. Don't have to be gaudy. But you don't dress up thinking, what will they say about this? Are you with me? There's a difference. A dharmic person is not, has got no concern with the outside. He has got all concern with the inside. He is intrinsically good. In the case of Mithyacharya, he is not intrinsically good. He is extrinsically good, putting up an act. And that is a crazy thing to do. Putting on act. By forceful anything forced, like Ramdita says, is never forced. Anything forced is never forced. Like people do forceful conversions. We are not converting anybody. Physically, you have done that, but not mentally. Anything you resist will persist. In fact, the idea of spirituality is what? Dissolving the desires. But by forcefully stopping the desires, you are going to increase the desire. When you suppress your desires, you are going to increase your desires. At least a person who is inside and outside negative and accepts that he is inside and outside negative may come a chance for him to ask, how can I become positive inside? But a person who is inside negative and outside positive, putting on an act, he will never come to that question. Because he is putting on this act. And he will be constantly living in fear of being exposed. So he says, these are all madness. There is a desire. Therefore, this reaction. There is anger, means what? There is desire. If I suppress my anger and say Hari Om, Hari Om, that will have to come out in some form somewhere else. See, when they treat cancer also, they first remove the symptom, but then they go and do the chemotherapy and the other things so that the very cells are all removed. Otherwise it can come somewhere else. They have to make sure that it has been completely eliminated. So many places what happens is, when people frustrate themselves, suppress themselves, in the other areas it's coming out. They don't realize it.
So tolerance comes naturally.
Why are you asking this? In what sense? Tolerance comes naturally, yes, but what are you asking?
Anger is because you are intolerant.
Anger is because, yes, there is a desire and there is lack of awareness. If you have desire and you have awareness, then also you will not get angry. See, you may have a desire, but you are constantly in a state of awareness, then you will never fall into anger. Anger comes when you lose your awareness, when the desire takes over, not otherwise. That's why they say, you know, when anger comes, a simple exercise of breathing, for example, and you are aware in the beginning that my anger is mounting, you know, increasing. That awareness, they say, quickly get into breathing. And be conscious in your breathing. They say slowly it will reduce. There's a story about Dale Carnegie, I think. Dale Carnegie wrote a letter condemning the President's Act, President of America's Act, a long time ago, or something in some context. And then one lady wrote a letter to him saying, how dare you wrote something like that? This is not correct, that is not correct. So many mistakes she was pointing out. And he was so angry, so he immediately took a paper and started writing the reply with so much of anger. And by the time he finished the letter, it was about 11 o'clock at night. So he said, let me post it tomorrow morning. He kept it aside. Next day morning when he got up, he looked at the letter. He said, there is so much of anger there. He said, why do you have to react so badly? He said, let me write again. When he wrote the second letter, it was much mellowed down, much more mellowed down. Then he asked the question, in one night's sleep, this much has changed. Why not I delay the response even few more days? Then after a few more days, he actually wrote a letter, almost like a love letter here. Means, maybe I went wrong here, but this is what I was trying to say. But your point is something, something. Then that lady and this person became very good friends. In other words, jaha awareness hai, waha anger is not possible. Waha koi bhi negative is not possible.
No, but if you like something sharply and you disagree with it, and your automatic action is you get angry, then how is that awareness not there? How does that change?
Automatically you get angry means what?
Then, like your reaction is anger.
You disagree. See, that's what I'm saying. The fact that you are disagreeing means there is a desire that others should act in accordance with your belief or what you think is right. So when somebody goes wrong, immediately you get angry. And that is because you have lost awareness. Supposing I had awareness, I say, yes, he's done wrong, it's not right. He's done something wrong. You are able to see, but you don't have that desire coming in and taking over.
No.
See, in a way, if you have desire, to that extent you don't have awareness.
No.
If the desire is manifest.
Generally it's wrong is happening.
So what? That is, you take actions at the external level. Mm-hmm. That doesn't call for anger. That's what Krishna is saying. Anger is different. Anger has got nothing to do with the other person is right or wrong. That is a different matter altogether. It's not necessary that you get angry only when somebody has gone wrong. Somebody has gone against me. That is enough to be angry, no?
Because something
has
gone wrong.
Does it mean? In other words, what you are saying, rephrase your own sentence, you will understand. What you are saying is basically, somebody has drunk or taken drugs and that has mad me and made me go mad. Isn't it justified? You going mad is not justified at all in any case. You going mad, would you justify it in any case? Anger is madness. You know what they're saying is, they made a mistake, they made something wrong. They committed a mistake. Therefore I'm mad. My madness is justified. So leave me, let me be mad. Supposing you are at the age of getting married and you are interested in getting married and you somebody suggested this boy is good. Everything is good about him. Only thing, when somebody does anything wrong, he can become so mad that he may kill 5-10 people around him. That's only the small blemish he has. Average is okay. Are you ready to marry him? Why are you laughing? This is what you are saying basically, in other words. He is only going to kill 5-6 people when somebody makes a mistake. Otherwise, he is okay. So, we have no problem, get married to him. You say, what nonsense is this? You understand? Anger happens because of lack of awareness. When thoughts started moving outward, you get angry. When thoughts are moving inside, you cannot get angry. Impossible. Not only anger, you cannot but be forgiving when your awareness is there. You cannot have the revengeful attitude. You cannot be violent. Impossible. Externally different matter. External action we are not talking about. We are talking about the inside. Krishna is not saying non-violence should be practiced, therefore outside don't do anything. Exactly.
That person is not living for your expectation.
Yes, that expectation itself will not be there. In my point of view, the awareness of the self is there.
So it's within your expectations, which is not
fulfilled. That's why you're right.
Exactly.
No, but like Krishna is saying kill, but you're not.
Krishna is not saying kill.
In the battle.
Even in the whole context.
In the battle.
In the battle. Yes.
He's saying kill.
Yeah.
Without anger. So I mean,
without
action.
That's what I'm saying. Action has got nothing to do with anger. Anger is a reaction.
It's a detachment.
So remember this. Anger is a reaction. We are not talking about action. Bina reaction to the action. You are now, what you are doing is, anger ko retain karke, action ko drop karenge. Which is deadly. That is why the fellow is like all the time saying Hari Om, all the time. So you think, acha, what a good person. Action has been eliminating. Inside anger has been repressed. And one day you find that fellow committing such huge crime of murdering somebody. So my God. Have you ever noticed this? Somebody who gets angry and expresses it every now and then, he can never go to the extent of murdering anybody, because the pressure has been released. In the pressure cooker, if the weight functions properly on top of the cooker, it releases the pressure every now and then. Supposing it doesn't function properly, what will happen? The cooker will burst. That's what happens to people, and that's what he is saying in these words. You understand? Now this doesn't mean every now and then you release it. It is better than the other thing. We are not saying no. In fact, you can do that by releasing your stored away frustrations by giving directions to your actions. That's what he's going to talk about in the 7th verse and all that. But what he's saying here, till now in 4, 5, 6, is explaining to us that simply dropping action is not going to give you the desired result of moksha, of going beyond action.
Simply dropping action will not
give you the desired result of going beyond the action, which is moksha. So that is why he said, not by renouncing action do you get actionlessness, not by renouncing possessions do you gain perfection. Nobody can renounce action, nobody can stop acting, everybody will continuously act because there is gunas. And then now we say, if you suppose cut the karmendriyas, cut means frustrated, suppress the action, not express it, but mentally keep on thinking about the world. It is the mental thinking that develops desires, not the action, not the contact. You went to somebody's house, you met that person, left, matter over. But you after going home also, you go on thinking about the person, then only attachment has happened. You remember that story of two sannyasis we talked about? That fellow says, I dropped it long time ago, but you're still carrying on the mind. The mental intelligence is what produces desires, not the physical contact. But we are condemning the physical contacts. Everywhere physically we are trying to be correct, as though something wrong at the physical level. The problem is allowing it to crowd your mind. That's where the problem comes. So mentally you have to rise above it. Then physically, whether you are contacting or not contacting, really doesn't matter. You won't even notice it around you. It doesn't bother you at all. So something starts bothering you. So therefore, what are you doing? Making sure that it is not there outside. is what we do with reference to our stress management also. Go away from action for a while. Go to a resort. Stay there. What happens? Stress is gone? Nothing is gone. Temporarily you feel okay. You come back. Stress will never go because you firstly have a wrong understanding. You think stress is caused by action. Stress is not caused by action. Stress is caused by doership. It is not the doing that causes the stress. It is the doership that causes the stress. If I have no doership, even if I am working 24 hours, I have no stress.
No, but then why is it that, you know, when you're working, normal working, and you go for a holiday, you come back and you're very refreshed and you're more energetic?
Because temporarily you are out of the, what do you call it, the object.
Also, I think mentally you are kind of telling yourself that, now I'm going to be de-stressed.
It's not just, it's not all like that. Temporarily you are out. That's all. You come back, see, it's like this. You and the object of your perception come together. So when you come in front of the object, the doership also has come. You came back to work, doership was there. In fact, doership has always been there. It just was put to sleep for a while. That's all I'm saying. When the doership was put to sleep for a while, you feel relaxed. I am saying putting to sleep is not the solution for removal of stress. It is removing it permanently.
No, I'm not even saying stress. I mean, you're just generally working.
So you said, how come I've got relaxed?
No, I come back.
The question comes to exactly what does it mean? When I'm working, I'm not having energy. My question now, my point is, what is sapping your energy is your doership. Intense work is rest, says Swami Ramtirtha. If you have more doership while you are working, you will have more energy. Your energy is not there because while acting you have doership. We will discuss this later.
Intense
work is rest, says Swami Ramtirtha. Om Purnamada Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadhaya Purnamevavasishyate. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti.